Blog Talk Radio.
It is Kelly here. Good morning to you. And I hope you're doing well. As I had mentioned in the last hour, I just got back from a wedding. That's where I was on Friday. Kind of wish that I'd taken a little bit more time off, you know, how that feels. But that's too much stuff going on. So we were talking about whether Bill Clinton was senile, and I thought it was kind of an interesting thing because Bill Clinton has seemed like he's, even though he's obviously aged and he's turned, his hair has turned white and it's been a long time since he's been in office, you know, we're going on two full terms of a president since Clinton was in there, who he himself had two terms, so that's 16, going on 16 years since he was in office, and that the fact that somebody said that he had syphilitic dementia was kind of it sounded more like a joke to me than anything else. But the upshot was that there is something not quite right about Bill Clinton right now. And according to Kathleen Willey, who is this person who has been a critic of the Clintons ever since she claimed to have been, I'm trying to remember what the story with her, they said that he sexually assaulted her. She was a White House aide who was a friend. I think her husband was friends with Clinton. And that I'm trying to remember if he had supposedly tried to rape her or just made a pass at her. I'm kind of drawing a blank on that one. There's so many different stories out there. I've got a little bit of this clip for you to hear, but it's pretty fascinating stuff. But what do you think Hillary's chances are? I give Hillary very low chances for becoming president because it seems like the media at some level is not as enthusiastic about her as it used to be, number one. And number two, she's not, everybody gets older, everybody loses their touch. I mean, she's pushing 70. She's 67. By the time she got into office, she'd be 68. And that's isn't that around the time that Reagan came in? So, I mean, and she's no Reagan. Let's get a little bit of this clip here from her interview. Well, I'm having a little trouble with this clip. I'll line it up for you after the next break. But basically, all right. So here's the question that I have for you: what are the Democrats going to do if Hillary crashes and burns? If she crashes and burns late, there's nothing they can do. It's just going to be a lost election cycle, and it would also make me wonder if they wouldn't possibly lose more House seats and more Senate seats. And the reason that I ask that is because there's still a lot of criticism of the current administration. The president's numbers, his support is around, it's around 45 or 50%. It's not real high. He's not in a position and never really has been in a position and never been able to spread his support to other people. Whenever he's helped other politicians in their races, they've lost or they haven't done as well. So now that the president is around 45 or 50% support, maybe at times 55%, but never in the 60s, you have to wonder if there's not going to be more House seats lost and Senate seats lost. There's a lot of people in the country, and I talked to one of them. My friend's mom wanted to me. Now, these are the people that became liberal. And so the mother, who I had always thought of as liberal, this is kind of a weird story. She's become conservative. Now she only listens to Fox News, and she was desperate to talk about politics and who I thought was going to run for president. And maybe she had heard that I had a radio show or whatever. I had talked to her a long time ago. Real nice lady, but she seemed to be fairly informed. But as a matter of fact, she asked me who I thought was going to run, and I said, or who was going to be on the ticket, and who would I like on the ticket. And I said, this guy who's out of Wisconsin, Walker, I think he's good because he's been through a lot already. He's been elected and reelected, and he won a recall race. So he's a little bit bulletproof. He's also a true believer. He seems like a real conservative. He went after the unions and the right to not be in the union. And the state where he's at has progress to the right. Now, she said, who do you think would be for the vice president? I'm not really sure. I mean, there's a number of people. There's a large number of people that I think that could run and do a pretty well job either running or as a president. I don't think that Dr. Carson has the experience to win a campaign at this level. But he seems like a nice guy, and he's obviously very smart, and he's conservative. I don't think Huckabee's got what it takes. Those are two people that I told her that I thought were not going to make it. For the rest of them, I just, in terms of Rand Paul, I think that he is, I mean, there's something about libertarianism. Libertarianism is a minimalist approach to government. And so how do you persuade people that while you've pretty much your whole life, you've been opposed to big government and you've been opposed to military action, but if push came to shove in the Middle East, you'd be ready to jump in there or any other area if need be. People in this country might be huge critics of the war in Iraq, but we are not critics of war per se. We're very enthusiastic about the military, about keeping the world's biggest military and being ready at a moment's notice if we have to do something. And I think that's going to be a hard hurdle for Rand Paul to overcome. Some of the other ones, she asked me, what if I didn't think that Jeb Bush was the front runner? I don't know. I think people have Bush poisoning. You know, I think people are sick of Bush. And she said, well, why wouldn't that mean that he's part of this family? Wouldn't it mean that he would be able to fight the Clintons? And I just thought, you know what? I think that argument is kind of gone. People are very sick of this dynastic thing. Even if they end up supporting Hillary and Jeb, I think there are a lot of people out there that are basically not only just over the Clintons and the Bushes, but they're very afraid of this dynastic approach of this what they see as a couple of families taking everything over. They're very nervous about it, and because it means that quality goes out the window and all you get is quantity. Is Jeb Bush going to be a radically better president than George W. Bush or his father? I mean, don't they all kind of seem alike, you know? Maybe that's my misunderstanding of Jeb Bush, although I was in the state that he lived in and was the governor of, and he did do a pretty good job as governor, I'll give him that. But does he have what it takes? I mean, I she asked me what I thought was needed in the country. I think what is needed in this country, in my opinion, is to go back from some of these disastrous policies that we've developed. I mean, we need to radically turn things around. Don't you agree? I mean, let me ask you this. Do we need more illegal aliens to come into the country? Will that solve our problems and then get waived into citizenship? Do we have problems that will address? In my opinion, no. Whether you're in favor of illegals or whatever, is continually ramping up the number of illegals coming in going to solve our problems? No. Because a large part of our problems are economic. Is getting involved in more intrigue in the Middle East but not coming in as a full player going to help us out? No. Because, you know, we've been involved in this Muslim Spring, and the fact of the matter is that Muslim Spring has been just a total disaster. That's a lot of what's going on over there, is the aftermath of Muslim Spring. If we're going to be involved, let's get involved in the Middle East. Let's go blow up ISIS. But, you know, I mean, there's just so many things that need to be reset. And for whatever reason, maybe it's political correctness, the fact the president is black, whatever it is, people have been reluctant to criticize him. It seems like the GOP has been reluctant to stand up to him. It's like a given now that we've accepted Obamacare. But what we need to fix everything is some sort of a reboot that takes us back towards the center. I mean, it just, I can't imagine 4 more or 8 more years of this kind of thing going on where we didn't collapse, you know? I mean, I'm not somebody who's a fearmonger, as you know, if you listen to the show, but I don't see that if we keep doubling down on all this stuff, that it's going to work out for us. And all right, so, well, we'll have to take a break here. It is 7:17. And in Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. And we'll come back and talk a little bit more about this stuff. But anyway, interesting times, isn't it? Interesting days. 7-8, and it's about 60 degrees out right now. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. We will be right back. Or will we? Let's take a little... Got some stuff going on here. So if you were to pick, if you're a Democrat, who is your choice? Who's your person? Who's your individual that you're going to put your money on? I think that it is probably going to be Hillary. She is going to lose. And we've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly. Rob. Morning.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. What's up?
So was that a Chinese or a Machiavellian curse? May you live in interesting times. Or was that something biblical? I know I've heard that somewhere.
Chinese.
Interesting. Hey, you know what made me the most angry about the whole Obamacare thing was the view of those concocting it that the American people were stupid. When basically what the American people were stupid about was who they elected when you know, in 2008. Otherwise, we were powerless. You know, it wasn't that we were, you know, even if we'd had all the facts back when the Democrat-controlled Senate and Congress and presidency were ramming that thing down our throats, we were powerless to stop it. And now we've got a bunch of spineless Republicans, and we're still powerless to stop it.
Yeah, I see your point. Good point, man. So what can we do about it?
You tell me. I don't have the answers anymore, man. You know, those are for younger guys to come up with.
Yeah, so, well, I don't really know. We're kind of at a transition point, but it seems like we could be going farther to the left, you know, if the... What they're saying is that the GOP could lose a large number of voters, and this is something that I was talking to some of the people in the Tea Party about in the GOP was, how are you going to sell conservatism to younger people? Because the fact of the matter is that, you know, if you believe that you've got the truth and you've got something to deliver that's precious, maybe in your mind it's a carryover from the founding fathers, it doesn't matter if the young people in the country are not exposed to it or don't accept it, right?
Definitely. You know where the Democrats capitalize on is they develop these themes like, oh, you're poor, oh, you're black, oh, you're from some other country. And you know, they have this huge umbrella of people that they pander to. And everybody, every one of those groups votes for, you know, and they don't all get what they want, but they know that at least somebody says hello to them once in a while. Whereas the Republicans, you know, it's like the more you vote for them, the less they value you. You know, it's like, oh, well, we got those votes, so we can start moving a little more to the left, and, you know, because we don't have to worry about those votes anymore.
Yeah. The thing that would worry me, I think, is that the Republicans don't seem to stand for anything other than the Democrats when it comes to voting and when it comes to what they're standing up for. So it doesn't seem like if the young were exposed to the Republican ideas in theory, in practice, there's no difference. Maybe it's like you know, liberal light, Democrat light. They're confused by that. And, you know, there's a certain amount of it's, you know, the liberalism or the Democratic approach is a little bit sexy. You know, they've got all the sexy positions.
You know, 3 or 4 years ago, you know, I was kind of the opinion that the Republican Party was just doing the rope-a-dope, just taking the punches and getting ready to really bust out with a right cross or a double cross, but there's no right cross or double cross in them. I don't know where it's gone. You know, they've done the rope it open. They're getting too beat up to even raise their fist again.
Yeah.
You know, to use boxing terminology.
Don't you think it's has to do with political correctness that if the Republicans try to stand up for what they say they believe in, they get beat down in a way that they can't survive it, you know, the beating?
People that are on a true course, you know, like Trey Gowdy and the guy in Wisconsin you were talking about, I always have a trouble remembering his name. There's some good people out there that stay the course. But you have so many spineless Republicans anymore. I don't know where they came from. You know, they have no inner values. So how can they give values to the decisions they make once they're in office?
Yeah, well, I mean, and I think that goes to show somebody like Reagan had these values, these inner convictions. Then he kind of played them out, and it was he was a tour de force. And a lot of these people that are getting into office, like you say, don't seem to have the convictions to really stick to their guns. They want to stay in office.
They do, and they have no personal armor against bad press or no press. They don't know how to take personal criticism or people lambasting them, just because that's the only thing that the other side can do.
They
take it to heart and say, oh, well, I got to change myself because that guy made fun of me, convictionless.
Right. Well, Rob, thanks for the call. Really appreciate it. Have
sure.
a good day. Folks, I'm going to go take a break, and we'll be right back. Getting a satellite. Folks, just got a little bit of satellite feed there, so I've got a phone call here. I think it's probably somebody calling in to say that there was a little interference, but I don't know if that was related to covering while I was gone, but a satellite feed was playing in. Anyway, so the question that I think Rob is bringing up that I think is a reasonable one is, here's a couple of questions for any person who's in the GOP to answer or who considers themselves a conservative. Do you have a set of ideas or opinions that's different than the Democrats or liberals? And if you do, what does it stand for? And are you willing to fight? Are you willing to stand up and fight for what you believe? If not, probably you shouldn't run for office. That's just my impression, but you know, the upshot on that is that if you were to kind of cast the time back to Reagan, and in those days, you know, if everything wasn't set in stone, he didn't have a clear path. There's been some false information that's been put out. That basically Reagan had an easy time, but, for example, President Obama has had a hard time. Reagan had an easy economy. Obama had a hard one. Obama had a real tough, or pardon me, Reagan had a real tough economy to deal with. And he hit the ball out of the park. He put in some austerity measures to force inflation down. And after that happened, then he had reduced taxes, the marginal tax rate, as they call it. was reduced quite a bit, and it brought a lot of money into the markets. And when he did that, then the economy began to grow. And I believe by the time that he left office, it had gotten up to almost 8%. And we've never had any sustained growth in this country in the last 6 or 7 years. We have it the best maybe one quarter where we do well, and then everything falls back. But the upshot on that is that you've got to have 3% growth just to replace jobs. For the people who have lost their jobs and are looking for new jobs, or people that are entering the economy. And it makes it even worse, and you've probably seen this, the number of people that are coming into the country working who are legal or illegal workers who are immigrants are taking a huge share of the jobs from Americans. So that's where, you know, this rubber meets the road kind of a thing. You can be agnostic about whether it matters whether we bring in illegal immigrants, or let's just say we decide to bring in even more legal immigrants. But you can't be agnostic about the effect on the economy and people's ability to make a living. And we do have a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly. I was just wondering on this thing with the illegals taking the jobs.
Yeah.
You know, the people in this country would not do those jobs. Do you believe that?
No. Some of the agricultural jobs, but I think there's a lot of jobs they would do.
Do you think they're at the point now where they feel they have to do it because of the economy?
Who's they?
The American people, the citizens.
But I don't understand. What's the question? That they have to do what?
Well, you know, like the illegals, they say they'll do jobs that the average American won't do, right?
All right.
So are these American citizens that won't do those jobs, are they at the point now where they'll do them because they're getting, you know, they're hurting?
Well, I mean, I don't see anything wrong with bringing in people. If you're going to keep prices down, if you're bringing in, letting a set number of people come into the country to harvest or whatever, given that we have different economies and different cultures, and if it's agreeable to Mexicans to come in, for example, and do harvesting, I don't see anything wrong with that. I mean, that maybe they'd be doing the same thing back in their own country. But it completely breaks the game when you're bringing in a bunch of people and just leaving, letting him be here and saying, let's see what happens if we bring in millions of these people. It is obviously a way to change everything forever. I was thinking about that on my trip. No matter what else you want to say about bringing in a whole bunch of illegals, it changes everything forever. Then the question is, of course, is it a good change or a bad change?
Well, it's like, you're right. It's like Michael Savage said the other night. He said, if we cut these social programs out, he says that's going to force people to work. Right now, even these illegals are coming in the country, and they're like getting a paycheck, you know, and then they're also getting the social services on the side, you know, and it's like you got to put an end to it.
Well, there have been a number of things that have been done by this administration that are objectively crazy. It's crazy to say we're just going to bring in as many illegals as we can and pretend that we're worried about it, pretend that we're working on it, and, you know, tell people we're doing everything we can on the border, that like saying we've done everything we can to stop ISIS. It's objectively crazy to do that. Now, history keeps moving. Time keeps going forward. There's going to be an impact from that. It's not just a theory of how to change the society. But it is absolutely crazy to do stuff like that and think that people are not going to be harmed by it. And there's been a number of things like that. And that's why people are so desperate for change. They want somebody in office who's predictable and that they can understand, even if they don't necessarily agree with everything they do, so they can understand what motivates them.
I think this Ben Carson's the man.
He can't be. He's not electable, in my opinion.
Kelly, he's, I don't care. I mean, he's not a politician. That's why he's the man.
people who are not a politicians don't get elected because they don't know how the process works. That's my observation. All right, so tell me the last person who tried to do it, Ross Perot. What happened to him?
Yeah, but he was right.
Who was right?
Perot.
Ross Perot was an idiot.
Oh, he was talking about NAFTA way back in 92, and now we got TPP, Trans-Pacific, this thing that fast-track thing that's being pushed.
Listen, Ross Perot is the kind of guy that got up and complained about big government while becoming a billionaire off of government pay, government contracts. It's crazy. I mean, Ross Perot was in so far over his head, you know, he needed a snorkel just to move around.
Yeah, but he wanted to keep the jobs in the country.
So what impact did Ross Perot have on the country, positive or negative?
Well, I think he could have had a positive effect.
The question, Mike, the question isn't whether he could have had, anybody can have a, could have a positive impact. Did he have a positive or negative impact?
Well, I think he presented the other side. I think that's good.
All right. In other words, you can't say that he had a positive impact, therefore he didn't. But the thing is, if it wasn't for him, look at it from this angle, presidential scholars and people who are bet on horse races, political races, said there's no way Bill Clinton gets elected if Ross Perot doesn't come in the game.
That's right. Hey, Kelly, this thing with Clinton, look what he did with NAFTA. I mean, we've lost tons of jobs in this country. And now they got this TPP going through. I mean, there's going to be no jobs in this country left. People, you're going to see white people out in these fields picking lettuce. That's how it's going.
For the sake of the argument, what difference would it make if white people pick lettuce?
Nothing. It's fine. But I'm saying that that's what's going to you're going to start seeing.
Well, if there's nothing wrong with it, what difference, then why are you pointing it out?
Because I don't think that it should have come to this.
I'm sure that there has been a really negative impact from this administration, but there was a negative impact from George W.'s administration.
Yeah, I admire migrant workers.
And
I admire the hell out of them when I see them out there working.
In these areas, you have to go back to Reagan to find someone who really seemed to understand economics.
Well, Reagan, I blame for having open borders. I mean, did you read that? Did you listen to Ann Coulter the other day? She's got a new book out.
Mike, you're so vague in your questions. You know?
No, but she said that it all started with Reagan and his open border policy.
Well,
and she's right.
Mike, let me ask you this. Who is a president who's a political leader that you would put your faith behind that you in the past you consider a great leader?
Eisenhower.
All right, I guess we need another Ike. Thanks for the call, Mike. Okay, folks. It just seems to me like Hillary doesn't have a shot. I don't know why. There just seems to be this sense of doom that is hanging over her campaign, that Bill Clinton is not who he used to be, that Hillary has got a really bad track record, that they've got tons of money coming in that they can't really account for, that they've got money coming in from other countries, and some of it's from tyrants and despots, and nobody has an answer in their campaign as to just seems like it's a perfect storm to take her out. But if she's taken out, who's going to take her place? You know, who is it going to be? O'Malley? I mean, you know, O'Malley's an attractive guy. He takes his shirt off and plays the guitar or whatever. He seems youthful. He's got the Jack Kennedy thing going on. And then you've got Bernie Sanders, who's an admitted socialist. Now, maybe he's honest and everybody else is not honest, but are you going to, after what we've been through for the last 8 years, even if people are sympathetic to socialism, are they going to elect a socialist? Or if they were going to elect a socialist, would it be Bernie Sanders? Bernie Sanders sounds like somebody from the Bronx. I don't know how he got up in Vermont. I assume that he moved there to practice law or whatever. But and I did, like I'd mentioned this before, I knew his son in college, and he had a little bit of a scar on his face. I can't remember his name. He was a nice kid. He was very kind of a shy guy, kind of a humble person. But somebody pointed out that he was, you know, he was the son of the senator, but it made sense that he went to Oregon because Oregon is the place where, you know, it's very liberal and kind of a fun place to go to school, but it's not as intense as Berkeley. But anyway, Bernie Sanders, I don't think he's electable. O'Malley might be electable, but he's got to deal with Hillary. Now, on the other side, how about this? How about somebody is running a walker? Could he possibly pick Susana Martinez? You know, I mean, Susana is an attractive candidate, and it doesn't really even matter whether she has been mildly or wildly successful here. She's somebody that got reelected. She's a new breed. She's a Hispanic female and is running the state and is seen as not having failed. So I think that puts her in the mix. Now, do I think she's going to be picked as the vice presidential candidate? Probably not. And she would tell you that she's got her sister to take care of, and therefore she can't possibly make that transition. Now, from my thinking, she probably has more help as the vice president to care for her sister than, and where does the vice president live? In the observatory? Some sort of an observatory. I've walked past it in D.C. when I was up there. But I think she could have a shot at that. Why not? I mean, the vice president in many of these administrations is largely a figurehead. It's the person just there in case something happens to the president. Occasionally, they get involved in policy, but do you think Joe Biden has a chance? I don't think he's got a chance, even though his son just died of a brain tumor and there's a certain amount of sympathy out there. So on the right side, you've got Rand Paul. You've got Jeb Bush, both from political families. You've got Carson, Dr. Carson. Mike Huckabee, if he's in the race. Walker, though. Walker is involved, and Walker seems to be winning a lot of these polls. So whether Walker has the experience to run at the highest level of political campaign, I mean, how did Obama do so well with the very little experience that he had? How was he able to come in and run this perfect campaign? And obviously it had to do with the fact that he followed what Axelrod and some of these other political minders had told him to do. But, you know, does Cruz have any chance of being elected president? I don't know. His father, who was a minister, had a prophecy about him, but I don't know if Cruz has got what it takes. I don't know if he wants to be president. There are a lot of people hanging around the Republican sidelines, hoping to get a chance in the game. So, I mean, I do like Dr. Carson, but yeah, I've got a couple of questions about him. And I was saying to Mike, he was unelectable, in my opinion. To have your first race in your life be for president is hard, especially if you're in the private sector. And Ross Perot couldn't do it. And I just think it's just a difficult thing to do. It's hard to run at the local level and win in a political race. You know, there's always more involved than what people think. And to try to do that at a national level, I mean, I think a lot of people on the right consider what is happening in this country as a full-blown crisis. It's a constitutional crisis because they see the people in office walking away from the Constitution and claiming that the Constitution is a living document. And I was thinking about this, my friends who'd become liberal, they're treating the Bible like a living document. It is the same exact theory. You know, times have changed, and I think that brings a lot of chaos, and it gives people the sense that they don't know what the future holds. But there are a lot of people, and maybe they're older, maybe they're more white, I don't know, but there are a lot of people out there that have had a conservative view of life, some Democrats, probably mostly Republicans, but you know, if you don't figure out a way to preserve these ideas and pass them down to the kids, this is a way of life, no matter how successful it was, that is ending. You know, countries don't necessarily fall because of some crisis, some great crisis that comes in from nowhere. Countries and societies fall because they give up on, they stop believing in what brought them to where they were, where they're at. And I just feel like America is facing this. If most of the people or a large percentage of the people who are conservative or Republican, conservative for lack of a better word, are getting older, it doesn't matter what the achievements of America are, because people are no longer persuaded by that. It doesn't mean anything. And you've got to be willing to countenance or think about a group of people who are willing to sacrifice to get what they think is true or what they believe in, which might be socialism. So you've got these people in these communist revolutions who are willing to, in China and Russia, et cetera, willing to go through extraordinary sacrifice to establish socialism, even up to the point of allowing themselves to be killed or dying, getting murdered by the government because they believe in the model in general. Neither China nor Russia had prosperity when they were fully plugged into communism, but there were tens of millions of people who believed in it nonetheless. I was talking to somebody last night about this idea that religion or that political beliefs are somehow related to religion. They're either the product of religion, like I think a lot of people who are in the GOP that are conservatives are conservative because their religion tells them that is the most likely place to protect their ideals, or the political ideas themselves are like religious. They're like religious doctrines. You know, we help the poor. We, you know, we get rid of poverty. We don't help people in poverty. We're going to get rid of poverty, and we want people to have a living wage, and we want, you know, we want people the biggest problem in the country is inequality, but outside of global warming, of course. So you've got all these doctrines that have the same fervency and same support as a religious doctrine. So we got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
You gotta be kidding.
Yes.
You gotta be kidding. I don't know which is more funny there, Kelly O. By the way, happy Monday to you.
Happy Monday.
I don't know what's more funny, this collection of candidates in your clown car, or you trying to give them some sort of positive gravitas. Now, I don't know what's more funny, but you've got every single one of your candidates out there, those that have declared and those that have yet to declare but are in the process of thinking of running, they are so seriously flawed.
Why?
Their statement.
Who's flawed?
Anybody.
Why?
Just look at what Lindsey Graham just recently said, some kind of off the wall nonsense. This Ben Carson guy that the Doggy Mike guy likes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, no matter where, he's got stuff he's saying that's so far off, he's coming from
like
another
what?
Planet.
Like what?
And then you got that whack job
Examples.
Senator from the Thud Cruds, you know, from Texas. He's another whack job.
Frankie,
then you got Rand Paul.
Frankie, you got nobody. Frankie, hold on a second. Just calling these people each one by name and then calling them a whack job and then moving on to the next doesn't really communicate any information or knowledge. So what exactly are you getting at?
I'm just saying, I'll get right to the nub of it. All your candidates are running right now in primaries directly and most energetically participated in by the evangelical Jesus freak crowd. And that's what's going to happen. You're going to get the guy like that, Rick Santorum, I call him Rickety Sanitarium. He's going to wind up getting the nomination again. And you know what's going to happen? He's going to have the same thing happen to him that happened to that whack job Indiana senator, governor, when he tried that the religious freedom thing. You saw how well that worked out for him, right? I'm telling you what, you guys, all you conservatives, especially with the primary, are locked, stock, and barrel,
Frank,
into this evangelical
stuff. Frank, let me ask you something. Who gets to decide what is true on a national level?
What do you mean, what's true on a national? What do you mean?
I mean, like, why does one group of people get to decide that there has to be gay marriage, for example, since you're bringing that up, and any person who's opposed to it is out of their mind, is living in a cave, is an absolute religious fanatic? Why is it one group of special people who get to call the shots and rewrite the dictionary?
That's not true. I mean, look what happened in Indiana. It wasn't just one small group that caused this whole thing. It was one small group that pushed forward this gay. I have no game in dog in this fight thing. I'm just saying the way it is. Now, the majority of everybody else in that entire state of Indiana and the rest of the country, all the businesses and whatnot, went and slam-dunked that small evangelical Jesus freaks, and that's what turned the whole thing around. So your thing saying is not correct.
I'm asking you, like, with the abortion thing, abortion went through with Roe v. Wade, and ever since then we've been having this kind of under-the-surface battle over abortion because it was never really settled. You've got the same thing with gay marriage. There's a vast majority, but there's a lot of people out there that are opposed to gay marriage and are not going to take it sitting down. Well, pardon the metaphors, but anyway.
You're right. That's it. But God bless America. This is a great experiment in democracy. You're not going to do anything about it because that's the way the structure of our society works.
It seems to people that it's fascist that one group gets to be the – what's the difference between having a theocracy versus the politically correct crowd that gets to say this is right, that's wrong, and if you disagree, we're going to drive you out of public life?
There isn't. The theocracy is going to do it my way or the same thing when you've got the other
That's political correctness, then. We agree that political correctness is a theocratic movement.
Yeah, that's right. I agree with you. That's right. When you got somebody saying you only have to say it this way, and if you say it the other way, you're wrong. So you're absolutely 100% right on that.
What do you think of political correctness?
What's that?
What do you think of political correctness?
I think it's ridiculous. I think it's insane. It's stupid. This is the United States of America, First Amendment. I got a right to say, as long as I don't scream fire in a theater or some other kind of terroristic thing, I got a right to say whatever I want or listen to something I want to say. I mean, that part is that you're 100%. We're on the same sheet of music with that, Kelly. You know, this political correctness is nonsensical. Theocracy is nonsensical. But again, I will say, this is the United States of America, our society. God bless America. This is the great democratic experiment, and this is what's going on. This is what you have when you have experiments. Everybody's trying something new, okay? And that's what you have when you experiment. Somebody says, hey, I don't like the way this went, so let's have an experiment. Oh, that didn't work. Let's have another experiment.
All right,
and that's
so
the way it is.
Why not let states decide whether they're going to support gay marriage or not?
Okay, you got that, what do you call that, 10th Amendment thing, the states' rights thing, or whatever the heck that is. I can't remember which amendment that is.
Yeah, 10th Amendment, whatever powers are not directly vested in the government.
Yeah, enumerated, whatever that one is. Yeah, well, I mean, okay, fine. You know, then you got that issue again. You got a bunch of, again, any government, our government, any government, Democratic government, is governed by the consent of the masses. Now, if the majority of masses want gay marriage, well, guess what? That's the majority. Okay, and that's all you've got. That's as simple as that.
But
now,
it's a little more.
You can.
It's more complicated because the state elections, the plebiscites, the elections on these things continually rejected gay marriage, but the federal courts kept overturning it, and now public opinion has caught up with that, but that doesn't seem to me to be a fair way to do it. If the people vote, let the people vote.
Well, okay, you got a point there. The key point, the operative word that you just used was complicated. You're 100% right. When you're dealing with masses of people that are pulling in all kinds of different directions, Kelly, you know, I want this, you want that, somebody else wants this, you got this group of ethnic, this, that, everybody's all over the, scattered all over the, it's not homogenous, not homogenous, what the?
Monolithic.
You know, homogenous. You know, you got people going all over the map, you know what I mean? And that's, again, that's just the way it is. Now, these things with our country, the way it is, you know, maybe it'll all work itself out. But again, this is a great democracy, a great experiment. And it is where you have it, you know. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. And Hillary, I'm not really excited about. She does have a good resume. The guy I like is Jimmy Webb. Bernie Sanders, he's a little too far on the left side. I mean, I like him. He's become a couple fella. This Martin O'Malley guy, no, I'm not too keen on him. But that's it for the Democratic side. But you know, I mean, I'm telling you what, you guys, you know, you've got a whole collection of guys and girls. They may be smart, but they're going to be beholden to that small cabal of Jesus freak types that are going to nominate them, and they're going to go crashing down in flames. I'm telling you that. So anyway, I just want to let somebody else get a chance to shoot in a comment. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I just, well, one thing, you say you want leadership by the majority. If 70 or 75% of the people say that they're Christians, then why not let them have a say?
No, again, we were back into this complicated thing. You could say that 67, there's more and more Americans that are becoming more secularized than otherwise.
That's true. Well, let's pick this up tomorrow. But I appreciate the call.
Okay,
great points.
Let's do that, okay?
All right, have a good day. All right, bye-bye. And, folks, we're going to take a break. Be right back.
Here's your Las Cruces in Southern New Mexico forecast on AM 1450.
Okay. Look.
The whole first hour? The first hour? I can't even get a hold of the fucking guy, let alone. I don't know why he'd be working on it. He's driving now, supposedly, with an auto. I'm doing that. That does look like somebody was in it. I don't know why somebody would be in it. But there's a... Yeah, I see it. I see it. Okay. That is. I don't know what that is.